All right, and welcome to Reviewing the Brew. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And as always, we bring you your brewer news. And let's start off with last night's game against San Francisco. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to say it's a shocking win, but it's certainly unexpected. Greinke, who's never faced the Giants before, which I thought was very interesting, you know, goes 5 1/3 innings, you know, gives up 3 earned runs, strikes out 5. Lincecum, who I was surprised that Bochy pulled him out after 5 innings, only threw 84 pitches. Neither pitcher getting the loss or the win. Cameron Lowe getting the win. Clay Hensley getting the loss for the Giants. And John Axford getting a 6th save. Your thoughts on this, Colin?
I thought all around it was a pretty good game. Jonathan Lucroy came up big and bumped his average up a little bit in that game. It was nice to see. It's nice to see Lowe get the win in a good outing, even though he only had, you know, 2/3 of an inning. Rodriguez, Frankie did really well. He's starting to right the ship.
Yeah.
And Vera's with 3 strikeouts too. A very nice showing from him.
Yeah, you know, Axford, you know, not allowing any hits or walks, striking out too. I think a game like this against a team like the Giants with a very good pitching staff, I think builds a lot of confidence. Because the bullpen, let's face it, had been struggling, you know, in April. And, you know, we had our concerns about it. But, you know, the starting pitching needs to settle down a little bit. Greinke's ERA is over 4 now. You know, Narvi's out. Markham's getting on track. Wolf is kind of, you know, there. And then Gallardo, yet again, cannot pitch against the Cardinals, whenever that comes up again.
Right.
The last outing was just absolutely horrendous, as
yeah.
as per usual with Gallardo. But
yeah.
Other than that, he's a solid pitcher. So, I mean, it does build a lot of confidence for these guys.
Yeah, and it's a win you like to see at an important time for the Brewers, too. You have a homestand coming up with the Reds and the Cubs, and then they start into interleague play. But, it was a good win at a very good time for them, coming off just a terrible terrible beginning to their West Coast swing at the Padres. But
yeah, let's not mention that pitcher for the Padres who we know who we're talking about here. But you know, used to pitch
I hate him so much.
And it's like, how does that happen?
And you know, I told myself we weren't going to talk about that disastrous Padres series, but it was if ever there was a down point in their year, I think we can point to that.
It was definitely May 2nd. It's just. I don't get it, you know. It's just, you look at it and you're thinking, oh, the Padres, you know. I think the Padres started going downhill after, you know, they lost to the Giants and lost the West the 1 year, and then Adrian Gonzalez goes to Boston. And I think after then, San Diego has never really been the same. But obviously against us, you know.
They had our number, that's for sure.
World beaters. But yeah, series against Cincinnati should be interesting, and the Cubs, because we will play them at home again. On that home stretch, and then we go on the road. But, last night was impressive, you know. Neither pitcher really looked that bad. Lincecum, I think he's still struggling a little bit with his command. He walked 4 people, but he only allowed 2 hits. Greinke really didn't look that bad. 96 pitches through 5 1/3 innings. The 1 run he gave up wasn't his fault. 3 runs earned, 4 runs overall. But, yeah, you like to see Luke swing the bat. You know, Nori, he did pretty well for filling in and left. You know, it was 1 for 2. But, you know, tonight's game, a little bit more of a different story. Got Randy Wolf versus Madison Bumgarner. That game starts in about 20, 25 minutes. Lineups are out. From Milwaukee, it's going to be Nori in center. Ricky Weeks at second. Ryan Braun at left. Good to see he's back. Aramis Ramirez at third, Corey Hart 5th at right, Alex Gonzalez 6th at shortstop, Brooks Conrad at first, who's 7th, George Gutierrez, the catcher, at 8, and Randy Wolf 9. Your thoughts on the lineup?
Well, there are a lot of people who are excited about Brooks Conrad. There are a lot of people that wanted to see him up at the beginning of the year, so it'll be interesting to see how he plays. At first, Braun being back, obviously going to be very nice, and it's good to see Aoki getting into the lineup on a more regular basis.
Yeah, and I think he should honestly be an everyday player. Like we talked about last week, you know, not only the money we're paying him, but the fact that he's proved himself in Japan to be, you know, a good player. And we have, you know, Niger Morgan and Carlos Gomez, who have had years to, you know, prove that they're beyond platoon players. And really, with Nori in the lineup, I think they're more the platoon players they should be instead of being everyday guys.
Yeah.
So, and I think, you know, obviously giving Luke Croy a well-deserved day off, putting Kataris in, and that's really no loss there at catcher, because both catchers are very good. Kataris can hit, Luke Croy can hit. So, yeah, that's very good.
I have reservations about Kataris defensively. I don't think he's as strong as Luke Croy, but obviously Kataris is Wolf's catcher, and that's just how that's going to be. But some things to note about Baumgartner, the pitcher we're facing. In his career against Milwaukee, he's pitched 21 innings. He has 2 wins against 1 loss, a 1.27 ERA with 18 strikeouts. So he's going to be a tough one to face.
Yeah, and you know, Baumgartner next to Kane, who I believe we face tomorrow, Baumgartner has been, you know, probably the constant in the Giants' rotation in the past year and a half going into this year. You know, he's young. He's very good. On the year, he's 4-1 with a 2.53 ERA, and he's just done very well. You know, with a lineup that, you know, is without Pablo Sandoval for right now, they don't get much offensive support aside from Martin Cabrera and Buster Posey. So it's very interesting to see the fact that Madison Bumgarner has 4 wins, and it's, you know, the beginning of May. That's very rare for a Giants pitcher to do. So I think the Giants overall, you know, are going to play this series, you know, very hard. Tomorrow is Markham versus Kane, which will be another good matchup. But I think this whole series just had really good pitching matchups overall.
Yeah, I think we're definitely running the gauntlet against the Giants. But it's going to be exciting because, you know, people, despite his record, Brewers have been able to get hits off Baumgartner. Ryan Braun has a home run and a 400 average against him. Alex Gonzalez has a 500 average against him, but it's only 4 at-bats. Corey Hart has hit well against him. Ramirez has plenty of experience against him, though not much success. And then Ricky Weeks has pretty much battered him for a 364 average over the last couple times he's faced him. So it should be interesting. I think if they can keep swinging well, and I think if Braun is back in good shape, we should be in for a really, really good game tonight.
Yeah, and you know, looking at the Giants lineup, I just have to, just because, you know, we're Brewers fans, get the advantage to Milwaukee, but just because you just look at the Giants lineup and there's not really much there. I mean, it goes Angel Pagan, Ryan Terrio, Melky Cabrera, Buster Posey, Brett Pill, Joaquin Arias, Hector Sanchez, Gillespie, Connor Gillespie, and then Madison Bumgarner. And it's just like, you know how they called the Giants' 2010 season, like, the duct tape series, or, like, the World Series, how they just won it because it was, like, a duct tape lineup?
Yeah.
It's like, now you're throwing in the WD-40 with this because it's just... I don't know what to say about San Francisco. I don't know, you know, obviously 3 big injuries they have, you know, Aubrey Huff, who's not really injured. He kind of has that anxiety disorder. Freddie Sanchez, who's been hurt for God knows how long now. And then Pablo Sandoval. So they are missing a little bit out of their lineup. But it's just...
It's a lineup that doesn't have much to speak of in terms of real power.
Yeah, and it's not...
So it's going to be... you know, they really have to pick and choose their chances to make something happen on the field.
Yeah, and it's not a lineup that you say can't win, because obviously San Francisco can still win. It's just, it's a different lineup, I'll give it that.
Right.
You know, and then looking at our lineup, you know, and talking about people missing from it, you know, obviously Matt Gamble, what a blow to him, and it's just, you know, I wish a speedy recovery for Matt Gamble. We all do here at Reviewing the Brew, and every Brewers fan wishes a speedy recovery for Matt Gamble, and we hope you get better, bud. So, it's just...
What a terrible time for him to have that injury, too. What a great year he's been having.
Yeah, he was on a roll, you know. Gamble was doing very well. He, you know, the average started to sink down, but, you know, I don't think that really mattered because, you know, he was batting around 280. It was around 246, but it's at the time of the year where you don't have that many at-bats to where your batting average is going to fluctuate either way. So I think, you know, Gamble doesn't tear his ACL, plays, you know, these next few months, his average, I would say, would be around 270. And I think that'd be fair for his first year. But it's so much harder now with him out. You know, obviously, we're going to go between Ishikawa and Conrad at first, maybe even Corey Hart if we need to. But, you know, I think that's interesting. And obviously, with Narvison's injury, I think, you know, putting Estrada in, I'm not sure if he's going to be the fifth man for the rest of the year. Because I noticed yesterday's start actually was going to be Estrada versus Lincecum, but Reneke decided to pitch Greinke instead. So, Colin, does that say something about Marco Estrada? Does that, you know, make his future as a starter uncertain?
No, not so much as it reaffirms the fact that you want your ace going against your ace. You know, it's an important time in the season here, coming into the middle of May. I think this was just the fact that if Lincecum's taking the mound and we have a top tier pitcher ready, we bring out our big guns. You know, I think there's reason to be concerned about Marco Estrada, as there's reason to be concerned about every number five pitcher you have. I think it speaks more to Lincecum and the Giants than it does to Estrada and the Brewers' rotation.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough to say. I mean, he did well in, you know, his outing against Colorado. But like I said, the thing that still concerns me about him is he hasn't gone very deep into games. And I don't know if it's pitch count, which he didn't have that high of a pitch count against Colorado. And I don't know if Reneke's monitoring that as a relief guy, you know, going into a starting rotation. But, I mean, he could be it, but it's just, I don't know if we can see him for the rest of the season going to be the constant fifth guy. But I don't know if that's such a huge problem, though, because obviously rotations, you know, find their ways to manage if they at least have three constant starters.
Oh, right. We have four, you know, very good starters. And I think we just need to, you know, Estrada will come along, and the fact of the matter is, Marco Estrada needs to be that fifth guy because we don't have anyone else that can do it. Peralta's not ready. No one else in the bullpen can go quite as long as Estrada can. And you're just going to have to, you know, do your best with that. But, I think going forward, you know, obviously losing Narvison was a blow because he was a guy who can take a lot of innings as a starter. He was a confident starter. And you just have to kind of play it by ear. I mean, there's nothing more you can do at this point.
Yeah, because, I mean, I did say in my last blog about how Estrada maybe should be a starter. And I was only saying that for the fact that if we get Kinsler back or get somebody, bring somebody up again and then try out another guy, like maybe, I don't know, just throwing something out here, maybe try Dillard as a starter. But I don't know if that would necessarily work because we need guys like Dillard, you know, and maybe Cameron Lowe to be those innings eaters that we lost in Hawkins and Saito. Because to get to K-Rod and then to get to Axford, we need guys that can maybe pitch two innings. And Dillard has done that before, and, you know, he'll do it again. You know, I think Vinny Chulk is going to be a very interesting character, bringing him up. He, you know, pitched one game against San Diego in that terrible, terrible series. And only went an inning, gave up two runs on two hits, struck out one, walked one. And you can't assess, you know, how a guy's going to do based on one, you know, inning pitched. But it's interesting to see because, you know, they brought him up and then sent McClendon down. So the bullpen's been having its ups and downs right now as in, you know, terms of getting on track to where they need to be and finding out who's going to be the guys who are called upon the most, because that's what Estrada was last year. He was the guy that was called upon the most next to, you know, Saito and Hawkins and Franky. He was there.
Right.
So, you know, now he's in the starting rotation and it's a little bit more of a different story. So, you know, like you said, he's really the only one that can do that job, though.
Yeah, he has the pedigree for it. He's been at the bottom, you know, he's been a fill-in starter before. It's nice to be able to have that just because
you know, bullpens and rotations are always in question throughout the season because people are going to struggle, people get injured, and, you know, you have any number of things that can happen that's going to cause an issue. But, you know, bullpens and rotations really depend on, they really depend on uniformity and having a schedule and that type of thing. So it's, when something like this happens, yeah, I mean, it throws everybody's confidence off.
Yeah, it's just, you know, injuries do that. You know, they make you scramble for, you know, who you have and who you can rely on. And, you know, a lot of managers have had to deal with that. You know, Renicky so far has dealt with it fairly well, and I give him a lot of credit for doing that. You know, I look at, you know, the grander scale of things inside of baseball itself this season, and man, there have been a lot of injuries. A lot of season-ending injuries at that. You know, obviously the big one so far was Mariano Rivera of the Yankees out for the season. They thought maybe his career would be done after this, but he said he'll return next year. You know, I just found out the other day, you know, he's been on the DL for a while, but Cliff Lee, I realized, was on the DL. You know, Doug Fister's coming off the DL, I think, Tuesday. Zimmerman, the Nationals' Ryan Zimmerman is supposed to come off the DL as well. The Padres, Houston Street, needs an MRI. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
It's crazy to see this many injuries this early in the season.
Yeah, and, well, it's crazy to see this many serious injuries this early in the season, I think. Remember that pitchers and catchers, they train and they work a lot more than the average, you know, hitter or infielder or outfielder. And so their bodies, you know, when something goes wrong, it can go really, really wrong because they're working all the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like we said, you know, and it's not these, you know, smaller players. It's like bigger players in, you know, the grand scheme of things. You know, the Giants just lost Pablo Sandoval. You know, he
right.
is a huge force next to Buster Posey in that lineup. So it's hard for teams to, you know, rebound and find guys that can fill, you know, those kind of power roles, because you can find somebody that sure can play defense, but if they can't hit, you know, you're really losing a lot.
Right.
So, I mean, it's not to say, well, we're going to blame, you know, them for that. Well, we can't blame some guy for getting injured. You know, it happens. You know, like the whole thing with, I think what happened with Jobert Chamberlain was he was playing with his son and was bouncing on a trampoline and actually fell and almost died from blood loss. And,
right.
And, you know, he's out obviously for this year. But freak things like that happen as well, and it's just, it's weird to see it. So
yeah. Well, and especially, you know, it brings up a lot of questions too. Mariano Rivera out chasing fly balls in batting practice. I know bullpen pitchers and you know, starting pitchers on their off days go and shag balls and stuff for batting practice. But, you know, you got to wonder, so you're 42 years old, running into the wall chasing fly balls in batting practice. Like, you have, I mean, you do have a career to think about at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, Mo's done that his entire career. But, you know, being, you know, you're not, you know, 22 anymore. You're 42. There's a difference. You know, your body just does not react the same way. So, yeah, I don't know really if that was the smartest thing he could have done. And certainly the Yankees, you know, have to scramble now for a closer, because Mo has been the closer there for a good 16 years. So, you know, there's been questions, is it going to be David Robertson? Is it going to be Rafael Soriano? Personally, I think it should be David Robertson. He's proved himself tremendously throughout last year and this year, being an all-star last year as well. But, yeah, it's a freak thing to see that happen. But the Nationals, with losing Ryan Zimmerman, haven't really skipped a beat at all. I think they've done very well without him. And, you know, having him back is just really going to add to the fact that they've got a heck of an offense. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do have injuries with, you know, oh, surprise, surprise, Brad Lidge. He's hurt.
Right.
That surprises me. Michael Morse is out. You know, Michael Morse did fairly well last year for them, but, it's you know, you see teams that do well, like the Nationals are, and you see them get all these injuries, and you're thinking, well, how are they going to rebound from that? And they have. You know, they're still, I believe, first in the NL East. And which brings us to the next subject of, you know, Bryce Harper and how well he's done so far. You know, because right now he's batting 261 with three RBIs, and had that big game the other day where he, I think, had, he had two hits and scored two runs. He got an RBI, and he was 3-for-4 that day.
Yeah, you know, and the last time we talked, we weren't sure exactly, we were under disagreement of when to bring up Bryce Harper, and he's come up and he's done really well. He's had a hit in every one of his games but two, and he's proving he's very much ready for the big league.
Yeah, you know, he's not facing, you know, bad pitchers. He's facing, you know, the Dodgers, the Phillies, you know, the Diamondbacks. He's facing good pitchers. So, you know,
right?
Maybe the fact that, you know, people thought, well, you know, he struggled in AAA, he's not going to do well in the majors. I don't know if that really is going to be the case, because he's shown so far that he can hit big league pitchers. And it's not, you know, something that people can take for granted, saying, oh, well, you know, it's just one or two games. You know, one or two games can turn into a slump. And, you know, fortunately, that hasn't happened for the young Bryce Harper.
Right. And, yeah, with only, I don't know, 10, 11 games under his belt, he's got time to slump yet. And that's really when we're going to find out, you know, who Bryce Harper really is, because he's having a great, very hot start for a rookie, and, you know, obviously everyone's very excited when you see young, exciting talent like this come up, but, you know, anybody can deal with good games. How do you deal with bad games? That's what makes you a big leaguer.
Yeah, because then it turns into a mental battle, and, you know, you start thinking about it, and then you really never get anything done, because it's always on your mind, you know, I'm chasing pitches I shouldn't, you know, I'm swinging way out of the zone. You know, I'm too impatient, you know. And Bryce Harper really isn't, because, you know, the Phillies, the Nationals play today. The Nationals won 7-1. Gio Gonzalez wins. Vance Roy loses. Bryce Harper goes 0-for-4 with a walk. You know, but he did see 19 pitches. You know, that's the thing we talked before with about Matt Gamble, was
right.
The fact that he was a little bit impatient. You know, maybe the fact that Harper, you know, is taking some of these pitches and then seeing his pitch and then swinging at it, I think that helps him, because, you know, taking 19 pitches, you know, in four at-bats is almost about 4 or 5 in at-bat, and that's pretty well, you know, that's doing pretty well for, you know, a guy who just came up. So, I mean, if he can learn to have that type of patience throughout the rest of this year, he's definitely going to make a huge difference, not only, you know,
right,
with the Nationals, but, you know, with confidence in himself and confidence, you know, in the next year, and hopefully he doesn't fall into that sophomore slump.
Yeah.
So with that, do you think, you know, if he continues on this road, do you think Bryce Harper is a candidate, and I know this is very early, a candidate for Rookie of the Year for the National League?
Well, I certainly think he'll remain in the conversation, regardless of how he does. I think when you see someone like that who's been highly touted and talked about a lot, you know, that's someone you're going to have to have a discussion about whether you want to or not. But I think if he keeps up the way he's playing right now, I think absolutely. He's going to have to pick up, you know, RBI, start hitting for a little bit more power, that type of thing, if he wants to get, really wants to be considered for it. But, you know, his chances will come, and he'll, I think he'll be up at the top at the end of the year there.
Yeah, I can agree there too, because I just, you know, obviously, you know, the AL, they talk about more of the rookies of the year, you know, but NL, I think, you know, you can't count anybody out. But really, with the fact that Bryce Harper has, you know, finally lived up to, you know, well, is he going to be, you know, one of the first 19-year-olds, you know, because he's only been 19 for like half a year now. So, I mean,
right,
you know, he is one of the youngest players in the game and one of the youngest players to ever come up. I'm not saying I don't think he's the youngest, because I think there have been other 19-year-olds. I think Andrew Jones was 19 when he came up. But,
yeah,
you know, Bryce Harper, I think, is a month older than I am. And that's astounding to see somebody, you know, who, you know, is a month or less older than I am in the major leagues.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about that.
Oh, you're
I'm 25. Ryan Braun already won Rookie of the Year and an MVP. So
you're young. You know, I mean, age isn't everything. I mean, my God, Jimmy Moyer's older than my dad and still pitching.
Right.
So, I mean, that's something else.
So you're telling me I got a shot in big leagues?
Yeah, you do. You can go in and win Rookie of the Year and, you know, play for the Brewers.
There you go.
But that'd be something. And, you know, obviously a very another short topic I just want to bring up is Albert Pujols still has no home runs, and Nori still has one more than him. actually, I don't take that back, but Jared Weaver has more no-hitters this year than Albert Pujols has home runs this season.
Right. It's amazing. Again, I think he's still being productive. He's still a major part of that offense, obviously, and, you know, it's hard to explain. Hitting home runs is a mechanical issue. It's an issue of luck, you know, getting the right pitches that you can drive, and he's still taking chances. It's not like he's hitting 140, you know?
Yeah, he's hitting close to it. He's hitting 194. So, it's just... I don't know if it's the pressure that he's getting from, you know, well, he hasn't hit any home runs, blah, 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 blah. You know, he's batting 194 with 5 RBIs, and I don't think that's what the Angels expected. Right. And, of course...
Oh, not at all. Not for the money they put
in. No, and I mean, you know, at least Prince Fielder is producing in Detroit. You know, I'll give him that. I mean, really, Pujols, I'm going to call the next Adam Dunn. Because, you know, every time Adam Dunn's at bat, you know, there are three things now that are assured in life. Death, taxes, and Adam Dunn striking out. Because it's going to happen whether or not you want it to. I mean, I think there is a point... sometime this season, I don't know if it's still going on, that Adam Dunn at least struck out once a game.
Yeah.
I mean...
And he had a terrible year last year. It was bad. I won't go as far to say as Albert Pujols is the next Adam Dunn. I think he'll turn it around. A guy like that, you know, Adam Dunn is no Albert Pujols, first of all.
True.
And then I think, you know, a guy with Albert's talent, just pure talent for the game, I don't think you stay that bad for that long. I think, obviously, he's not going to have, like, a stellar year, but I think he'll be, I think he'll turn it around eventually. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and I mean, there have been speculations that, you know, maybe when he starts hitting his home runs, that they're all going to be in succession. He's going to hit, you know, like, 5 in 1 week or something. And that very well may be the case, but, you know, I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if, you know, there's anything going on with him. I don't know if maybe he's just trying to get used to playing in an entirely different atmosphere because, you know, he played in St. Louis for 11 years. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's never easy to switch teams, and you need to find that new rhythm and then... new kind of cohesiveness with your other team, so...
Yeah, and it's been interesting, you know. I mean, the Angels are certainly not living up to the expectations that they had, but, you know, I think Jared Weaver's, you know, a no-hitter. Congratulations to Jared Weaver again for that.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, maybe that might be a little bit of the turnaround for them, because, you know, things like that, like we said, can change a team. You know, I watched the last three innings of that game, and when I started watching it, I didn't realize at that point that he didn't have a perfect game, because apparently somewhere, I think it was like the second or third inning, Chris Yannetta, like, missed a ball or something, and the guy, he struck...
Yeah, there was an error.
He struck out somebody, but he, you know, threw it late to first, and the guy was safe, and then Weaver ended up walking somebody. So I'm thinking, oh, he blew his perfect game then, but then I found that out earlier, I'm like, oh, his catcher did. But,
Yeah.
That's always a terrible feeling, being the guy who blew it, you know? Jim Joyce.
Yeah.
He who should not be named. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, still a no-hitter is very impressive, and people go, well, it was against the Twins. Well, the Twins are still a major league team, you know, like it or not. They're still a major league team. So, I mean, it doesn't matter what team you do that against. You know, it's an impressive feature, you know, to do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, There's a time when I think, you know, everybody's like, well, let's pitch against the Rays, because the Rays have got no hit and had a perfect game thrown against them in 2 years. So, you know, let's play that. Right. That'll happen.
Well, a Verlander got his first no-hitter against the Brewers.
Yeah?
I was watching that game. I remember that. I was embarrassed to go outside. I was afraid people were going to run off and make fun of me because I like the Brewers.
Well, you know, you can say that, because, you know, I think when he threw that was, what, 2007? I think
yeah.
He only been in the league for like 2 years, and you know, Verlander was kind of like a nobody at that point, and you know, now it's kind of like an honor. You know, well, Verlander just threw a no hitter against our team. I'm honored, you know. So,
right. I mean, it's not like good. I don't think many hitters will say that.
I mean, it's not a good thing, but I mean, you know, I'm kind of wondering, you know, if it'll ever happen with one of our pitchers, you know, and if it does, You know who I think I can see it happening to is probably Sean Markham.
Markham getting the no-hitter.
Yeah. Think about it. You know, he forces a lot of outs.
That's true. That is true. See, I would go Greinke or Gallardo first.
You know, that's the thing, though. Everybody expects, you know, the bigger pitchers to get it, you know, the bigger name pitchers to get it, and it never happens. You know, who would have thought Philip Hummer would have thrown a perfect game, or Dallas Braden?
Dallas Braden, right.
Especially Dallas Braden, in an A's rotation that's absolutely just struggling, you know, he gets gutted, you know, when you lose Cahill and Gonzalez, and, you know, it's now on Brandon McCarthy's shoulders. So, I mean, who really thought last year that Braden would have thrown one? But, I mean, I'm not saying Philip Humber is a good pitcher, but he just never would have expected it from a guy like Dallas Braden.
Right.
So,
well, you know, Bush League pitchers don't normally get perfect games, so.
Bush League pitchers typically don't get through the sixth inning sometimes.
Exactly.
So, but, yeah, I mean, I think he could be any one of our top three pitchers. But I just have a feeling it could be Markham, though, just because of the way he forces people to get outs. So
it would be an ugly perfect game.
Yeah. You know, it would be the prettiest, but it would get the job done, and we would be happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah, which is what Markham does.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at last night's game again, and I just have to bring up your buddy Caesar Esturiz, who went 1-for-1.
Oh. You know, it's funny.
Because I saw Lou made a comment about how he's talking about Caesar Esturiz more to get you riled up.
Yeah, I don't get it. We have this need to get really, really old. Used to be talent. Although Caesar Esturiz being a big major league talent is a stretch. You know, I'm glad he gets hits. That's great if he's going to do it. But, I mean, he's out there, and it looks like he's on crutches, you know? It's... We don't need him on the team.
No.
That's just it. And the only reason he stayed on the team and Brooks Conrad didn't get to come up until now is because we would have had to eat a couple million dollars on Esturiz's contract if we released him.
Yeah, and...
He literally was on the team just for that.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, it was surprising going into opening day that we had Esturiz on there and not Conrad and Ishikawa, and it became the question of having either Ishikawa or Conrad, and I'm thinking, why? Why can't we have both and just ditch Esturiz? So
that's why.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh.
Millions of dollars in the contract. It was basically like, I can imagine the meeting just, you know, Renicky sitting him down and be like, listen, Caesar, you're not good. You don't, we don't need you on this team, but...
Money is money, we gotta pay.
You got money coming, and we don't want to pay it, so...
Yeah, so... Yeah, I'm hoping next year, you know, he's not there, so...
I doubt he will be. I think it'll be another Kotze situation, but, you know, until then, it's just, I just have to, you know, grin and bear it until he leaves.
I mean, I know this is gonna sound kind of odd, but that almost kind of feels a little bit insulting to Mark Kotze, comparing him to Caesar Esturiz. It almost was a little insulting to him, but I don't know about that. But yeah, you know, hopefully next year, you guys like maybe Brock Kleygaard or Taylor Green or maybe even Eric Ferris will actually be up and be able to beat those backup guys for, you know, Matt Gamble and Ricky Weeks.
Right.
So who knows? Just hope it's not as tourist at all.
Yeah.
So yeah. Obviously, very, very, very much baseball still to play. That doesn't even sound right. I'm just really tired, so half the crap I'm saying probably doesn't even sound right. But
there's
a lot of baseball to play. Is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. That's just a bit. So, you know, I don't think we can be concerned just too yet about where we are. I think, you know, 12-14, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt right now. But
no, you'd like to see us be doing better, but
I mean, I think what does hurt about that is the fact that we're tied with Houston for third place. That's
right.
What kind of hurts a little bit.
Houston stretched their winning streak again. They're four games now.
Yeah, and you know,
by beating the Cardinals last night,
I saw that. No, you know, because on my fantasy team, which has gone through a plethora of so many relief pitchers, because I originally drafted Moe, Brian Wilson, and Kyle Farnsworth, none of who are playing now, and none of who are going to play the rest of the season. So I had to pick up Brett Myers, God, who else was it? Santiago Casilla, and I think that's it, because there's nobody even left. And I think, you know, I saw that, wow, you know, Brett Myers got me a save. And I saw, wow, it was against the Cardinals. And, obviously, these interdivision games are very tough. But, you know, facing, you know, the World Series champion, it's even more of a, you know, slap in the face of them and more of a confidence booster for the Cardinals. Because, not the Cardinals, the Astros. Because you look at a lot of the losses that they have suffered this so far, the Astros have been losing games by 2 runs or less. 2 to 3 runs or less. You know, they did have a 6-0 loss against the Cincinnati Reds, but they did have a 12-0 win over the Dodgers. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So, you know,
They're there, and they're doing well. They're 6-4 in their last 10. The Cardinals, by the way, are 5-5 in their last 10, too. So they're slowing down, and the Astros are heating up, and the Reds are on a tear right now. They're in the midst of a winning streak with, you know, and they've won 7 of their last 10.
Yeah, you know, we're going to face them, and that's going to be hard playing a team that's on fire like that. But breaks my heart that the Cardinals are starting to slow down. My God.
Right.
Oh, right. However will I sleep at night knowing that the Cardinals can't win?
Right. And, well, that brings up an interesting point, too, that but we are facing them at home, and we're not quite the same home team we were. You know, starting this year, we're 500 at home. So
yeah,
that's got to turn around.
Yeah, you know, last year it was a big thing of us winning at home all the time because we went 39-42 on the road. So you know, a lot of teams need to pick up a lot of their road wins. And, need to win those crucial games, and we were one of them because we got so used to playing in Milwaukee and winning in Milwaukee that I think we kind of lost that edge playing on the road all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. We've never been a terrific road team. You know, the Milwaukee fan base doesn't travel very well, and that's nothing against the fans, obviously. I think the Brewers have a fantastic fan base, but we just don't travel as well as, like, the Cardinals fan base does, you know, or the Cubs fan base does. So, you know, we face a lot more pressure on the road, I think, and at home, you know, we pack that stadium. We've sold 2 million tickets and the quickest in franchise history. So, I think, you know, and when they start to turn around at home, you bring that confidence with you on the road, and I think that's the key.
Because our fans aren't bandwagoners. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
You certainly did, sir.
You know, I'm not saying, you know, Cubs fans or Pirates fans are bandwagoners by any means. And I'm not accusing anybody in the Central of being a bandwagoner.
You just don't want any bad emails. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm trying to put a disclaimer on this now, so people at Redbird Rants, don't kill me. People anywhere else don't kill me, but
Oh, folks at Redbird Rants are harmless.
I hope so, but yeah, and I think it being May 5th now, I think we've got enough in April. You know, we're on track for how the season's gonna go, and you know it's gonna be tough because it's always that toss up in the Central between the Cardinals, the Reds, and the Brewers, and you know
right.
With Houston leaving the division, it's going to be the Pirates and the Cubs, and they're going to turn it around someday. So Milwaukee's going to have to turn it around tremendously. And, you know, maybe the bullpen's starting to do that now. The offense is starting to get back on track. So maybe it was just this tough first month we had to get through. And hopefully, I'm not saying it's going to be a breeze from here on out, because obviously, you know, we have a lot of big injuries and have to replace those bats. Because, you know, the biggest question was, okay, who's going to replace Prince Fielder after this season? Nice point to Matt Gamble. Now the question is, who's going to replace Matt Gamble? So,
right.
It's just
right.
Like, behind this door is behind this door. It's just,
You know, they say the season's a marathon and not a sprint, and I don't really agree with that as much as the season is like, season's like a war filled with a lot of smaller battles throughout, and you know, some people end up getting stronger as time goes on, and some people end up getting weaker, and it's who can get strong late and then keep that strength moving that ends up being the winner.
Yeah, that's very true, because you know, obviously every team at some point in the season hits a cold streak and then hits a hot streak. So hopefully when we hit our hot streak, it's going to be July, August, and we just keep going on throughout there, because I don't want to say we hit a cold streak and then can't just win. Because that's not going to happen, obviously. We have the potential to do that. We have, a lot of talent with us. And I think, we pick up a hot streak, in July, the end of August, around there. That's going to help us definitely going into you know, September and then maybe even postseason play, because we looked at, you know, how the Cardinals did that last year, being 10 games out and then coming back out of nowhere. I mean, that was amazing.
Right.
They did. So, yeah, obviously it can be done. So, and
And I think this month is going to bode well for us. You know, the Reds are going to be a little bit tricky, but then we're at home against the Cubs, and we travel to the Mets, the Astros, and then we face the absolutely dismal Twins towards the end of the month. So I think this is going to be the month where things, if things are going to turn around, this is where they're going to happen.
You know, when we do play teams like the Twins, like you said, and even the Cubs, and say, you know, we do get those wins, you know, obviously they're against teams that aren't as strong as, you know, we have upcoming series against, you know, the Diamondbacks and the Giants again, and then the Dodgers. So we win those games, it builds a little bit of confidence against these, you know, smaller market teams, smaller teams that, you know, are still trying to find their talent. I think that gives us the confidence we need to go forward, you know, saying,
right,
we can beat these guys, you know. We matched up, you know, pretty well last night with, you know, 10 months ago. Maybe we could match up today with Madison Bumgarner and tomorrow with Matt Cain. If we can do that, matching up against, in my opinion, baseball's best pitching staff, that should really set the tone for at least the next month.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we're about out of time for this one, so stay tuned for next week. And as always, thank you for listening.
Thank you.